Is Dan's here, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Good morning, everybody. It's 11 o'clock. We're gathered for the City-County Monthly Update meeting in the Josephine County Board of Commissioners Conference Room. Commissioner Fowler and Morgan and DM will be here shortly. We have our Mayor Roy Lindsay and our City Manager Aaron Kubik with us today.
Hello. I hear Commissioner DeYoung coming.
I hear him. Good morning, sir.
Good afternoon.
I know we talked about a letter last time, and so we're getting it printed up right now.
Great.
Just kind of with both our logos on it, so it shows differently, I guess. So.
Awesome. And it'll be good.
We're close on our final logo, and we want to make sure we get it to you guys for the combo paperwork.
Are there more changes to the one you're talking about, or when you?
No, it's just we're getting the final prints this week.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, right. We did some preliminary printing to get the fair.
Uh-huh. Okay.
But.
The major design is not going to change that
no,
much?
No, not at all. No, there's just a couple little tweaks. And then they're pairing it with other logos within the county to try and suggest how to use some co-located logos.
Okay.
And so,
all right.
Yeah, all that was kind of finishing up this week.
Great.
We want to make sure you guys have it so that you can print up and make us look really nice.
Yeah.
Like for CED.
Some Georgia.
So,
yeah.
Yeah.
That'd be wonderful. Yeah, send it to us. That'd be great.
Gotcha.
Well, to start things off, I have an announcement.
Oh, what do you have?
I have been asked to join...
the Navy.
No.
My golly, write it down. I'll send a letter of recommendation. I think we can just do...
military spending.
The chairman can do
that. No. I've been... LOC is putting together a group of Oregon mayors to go to Washington, D.C. on October 20th and meet with White House staff, Department of Homeland Security.
The old Visitors Convention Bureau back there never slows down.
Never slows down.
It was County Commissioners Week a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, that's cool they're organizing that. How many do you think you'll get to go?
Eight to a dozen.
Yeah. That's great.
So my experience, what we had 2 weeks ago, is they had top cabinet members. So secretary level, undersecretary, assistant, undersecretary, that kind of up. And they talked a little bit about where they're at, but they really opened it up for feedback on what are we dealing with at the local level, and they wanted to hear. And
wow.
So they spent a good portion of the time asking us for questions and how are things that they're doing affecting us and what can they help with. And so it was a good opportunity. Just about everybody got a chance to speak. And as far as a year ago, questions were really limited when they invited us, and this year they allowed a lot more time to get feedback from local concerns.
Okay.
So hopefully you'll have an opportunity at least once in the time. I mean, because they had multiple panelists for us, and everybody got to speak at some point in one of the questions in time. So
yeah, we'll be meeting with congressmen and senators too.
Good.
It's going to be a full 3 days.
I would ask in that, I know you guys are not as directly impacted by SRS and PILT. So SRS is the Secure Rural Schools payments that we receive to supplement then PILT is payment in lieu of taxes.
Yeah.
Both of those in our county fund, 5 million comes to the county, they say, 2 million comes to the county itself. The other 3 are going through the schools. So the 2 million that comes to us is funding sheriff patrols right now. And so if there's any support that you guys can lend of renewing SRS with Congressman DeFazio, we had asked him if he could add it to the FAST Act as committee chair. So just as a consistent messaging, it has an impact on our entire community when law enforcement's funded. So
yeah, it does. It does. Okay.
What we find is our congressional delegation is very supportive of SRS and PILT, but we still have to have the mechanism to get it through Congress. And so what we had asked 2 weeks ago was if Congressman DeFazio would be willing to add it to the FAST Act. And so if there's messaging that's consistent. But you represent your body. I just thought I'd let you know what we...
Well, it's good information because sometimes... A lot of the things that the county does affects us as well.
Oh, sure. Well, and you guys should have some sort of pre-meeting and make sure you don't duplicate your questions and stuff like that.
Yeah, I hope so.
You guys can look sharp.
Well, I'll know more this week when we go to LOC conference.
Oh, that's right. Like, your conference is September.
Yeah. Ours is in November. Starts tomorrow night.
Well, congratulations on being asked. And I hope that it'll be a rewarding time for you and also an opportunity for us to have rural Oregon issues represented there. So.
Yeah. I'll be getting together with Aaron over the next couple of weeks, building a list of bullet points, ideas that need to, and prioritize them.
Cool.
Probably won't get through them all, but.
No.
One thing that you can do, even if you don't have a chance to ask all your questions, is if you have a one page that you can have pre-typed and signed, that when you get there, and Congressman, I have this for you, and they'll take that for you. So if you have more opportunity offer.
Good.
Because they'll have
I'm
you
glad
all.
I raised the.
Yes. You're asking the right person.
You'll have an opportunity to bring up stuff, but with a group of people from all over Oregon, they may not give a lot of time. So that opportunity to have some ideas predetermined on a single page of how that impacts you and what you're asking of them to help you with.
Camille came up with an idea of, at the Ambassador's Conference this year, they had these little refrigerator magnets outlining Oregon, and not all of them, but many of the cities just faintly printed in it. And I thought I'd hand those out too.
I may have passed along some new logo stickers.
Yeah, you may see them inside the women's bathroom when you hang out.
Or maybe Camille.
But I wouldn't admit to it. Don't come back. Hey, it's all your
don't
stickers.
Don't know where they came from.
It's all your stickers all over the table. I'll put them in the women's pants. You can tell on yourself. One of the things that one of the guys from ONC, when he was back there, and we had mentioned at one of our meetings, is that when you say, yeah, I'm from Oregon, if they're Republican back there, they go,
yep.
Because we are known as a very, very blue state.
Yes.
And he said, excuse me. He says, I saw the veil come over. I'm from
Southern Oregon.
I'm from such and such a county. I'm from the ONC counties. I'm not from Portland. If you look at a map, there's little blue dots all over it along I-5, and the rest of it's all red. I voted for you. And the guy says, you know what? You make a real good point. Come on in my office.
Yeah.
But that was the difference, because you will get a, you're a blue state, you don't do anything for me. The president says you're a blue state, you didn't vote for me, all your electorates went somewhere else. You're a blue state, and they cover you up. But if you're talking to a Republican, just remind him that you are, just say, no, I'm from Southern Oregon.
Yeah.
We're not from Portland. We're from Oregon, not Portland.
You know
and
what?
And don't do it to a Democrat. You have to, boy, throw you out in a minute.
We both have nonpartisan positions, and they represent all of us. And
yeah.
I found that our congressional delegation, both Walden and DeFazio, both that cover our county, big things for DeFazio, look up before you go what committees they're on. So DeFazio is transportation. So are there transportation things that you guys are dealing with, that any projects in the works that he could maybe help fund?
Yeah, the big why.
So I brought up our airports and our Southern Oregon Air Academy, but is there specific, Court Boyce, when he was there from Curry County, brought up their mudslides and affecting Highway 101, and DeFazio was specifically on that trying to help. So if you know what committees they're on, and specifically an ask related to their committee, that is something that would also be a recommendation from a local. Is there something locally that you're working on transportation-wise that he can help you with? Because what he can do is, as that committee chair, they can allow appropriations to their district.
Yeah.
And so if there is an ask that's a specific that you can use, hey, we got this transportation process.
We got a water plant coming up maybe for, an infrastructure committee?
Yeah, I don't.
I know.
But for me, it was, we have a runway extension project that we're working on, and we're about to wrap up engineering, and then we're going to be needing the funding with FAA. So if we have transportation, who's able to help with that?
Yeah.
Just something to consider, that's something that is, with the senators, I don't remember what all committees the senators are on.
I don't either.
But you'll probably meet with both the senators and the congressman.
I think we're meeting with both senators and Walden and DeFazio.
But if you're from Oliver State, they might have you with Schrader and the rest of them too.
Yeah, my understanding is we may be meeting non-Oregon legislators as well.
Got it.
But I'm not sure.
Yeah.
Because I haven't seen the schedule yet.
I ended up with some Minnesota folks.
Minnesota.
Yeah. Minnesota.
You had to say it right. But no, I'm just kidding. Anyhow, that's just something to keep in mind.
Well,
is
the
if
White
you know
House really has turned its eye on getting away from the big city representatives only and saying inviting every commissioner, inviting mayors. They really have gotten a little more local, so we want to take advantage of that.
Absolutely.
And be professional and, yeah.
And
informational.
And to be asked,
and, yeah.
To be asked is quite an
yeah.
honor.
Yeah, and it could be a good policy going forward that we'll get invited more often and they'll hear more
yeah.
total American issues and not just cities only.
And so. Also understanding the demarcation between the big cities and the rurals,
mm-hmm.
rural cities, which
yeah, which is so pronounced now.
Yeah, so pronounced. And the cookie cutter yeah. approach does not fit.
No.
Our big cities haven't demonstrated that they're going in the right direction.
No, that's true.
Really.
Well,
if that's America, people are going, I'm not going there.
Well, and an example in Oregon is that if the Republicans hadn't been in the room, they might have had the diesel bill on vehicles and stuff apply to the whole state, but they got them to reduce it to just the urbanized areas up in the Willamette Valley area, and they may eventually come after the rest of us, but it'd be further down, further away,
yeah.
more affordable, and some of the kinks might be worked out. And they did that with the minimum wage. They did three circles. And so that kind of layered approach instead of the cookie cutter, like you're saying, is I think is the future of state legislation. So.
Yeah.
Be mindful that we're more than just what.
Pardon?
Did they tell you what they're focusing on specifically?
Not
affecting
yet.
You guys?
Okay. Not yet. No, we're just getting together, and I just got my itinerary zeroed in yesterday.
Sweet.
So.
You have a window seat?
No. Yes, I do.
Well,
but for,
council
for,
too.
For a senior citizen, yeah. the window seat is a bit problematic, especially when the flight is five
6 hours,
hour.
Yeah. are you doing the direct from Portland or Seattle?
Going Medford to San Francisco.
Oh, you flew United?
Yeah.
Okay.
And coming Delta, Reagan to Detroit, to Seattle, to Medford.
Oh, my goodness.
Golly. The weather should be great.
Well, good thing you like to fly, Mr. Air Force.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, it's just a few more miles over my million miles.
He was
Delta.
He was a crew chief on that airplane, so make sure you didn't throw anything out on your way. You're pushing stuff out the back of the plane. Don't get.
I was not a crew chief. No way.
Any other items on
that
our list? If we can pass that to
we got
the mayor.
Wonderful. That's for your signature, Mayor.
And with both our new logos.
Beaut.
What am I signing?
That's the ODOT letter.
Third
ODOT.
Lane support letter, I think.
Slip lane support, yeah. This is just a letter, a memo I got through Laura, through Susan C. Ryder, with regards to the joint community economic development. Yeah, I've got one. The CEDC, and Sam Engel, who represents both CEDC and also the Housing Advisory Committee, recommends that we bring in and have a joint meeting to have a discussion on some of the issues with the latest community health improvement plan.
Mm-hmm.
And also with the finalization of that, also the soon finalization of the So Ready's plan that they're doing. It could be a good discussion point for us moving forward in what we may want to look at from a program implementation standpoint if there's recommendations coming through with all of those plans. So I just wanted to give you that memo. It looks like it could be an item. I know we talked about the next time we have a joint meeting, it should be for a specific purpose, and this could be an opportunity for that.
Yeah.
Do they have a date in mind for that meeting?
No. That would be for us to determine October, November. I think closer to November would be good because we might get some more information out of So Ready by then. I think So Ready would be closer to having
yeah.
something more complete.
Look out for our Association of Oregon Counties conference in November.
The final draft of the So Ready study is due in November, but the preliminary draft is due in October.
Yeah, so it'd be good to probably do it in November if we could.
I don't know if I told my fellow commissioners, and I'll tell you. I dropped out of that committee that was working with the
So Ready's
group.
Okay.
And I put in Lowell Gibson, I think it is, from Nice Badge.
Yes.
He just came back in as a member and was a past president and member, so he's a great functioning member.
He was at the last steering.
Yeah, I made sure he made it to the last steering. That's the one.
Yes.
Because I was going to miss the next two, and so I thought, well, let's get him in there right when they're doing the draft and all that.
Yeah,
and
we had a very good meeting. So.
He was at my meeting with their contractor, too. I guess they've met with us each individually.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, and so good. Lowell was
He already caught a little bit from that then. Yeah. And so, anyway, just wanted to note that change.
Yeah.
Is this shelters and villages? Are those warming shelters and things of that sort? Or what does that mean? Meaningful community engagement and partnership. Shelters and villages. The role the city-owned land can play in facilitating housing development.
I can show you an example.
So there are some... It's very important to have clear definitions of what you're talking about when you say shelter village, whether it be, say, a warming center or a warming shelter or warming, and there's a number of different levels of service when you consider those terms.
I'm passing a photo over to you guys. So
where did that come from, Commissioner?
I'll tell you right now. I had a meeting in Eugene, wildfire subcommittee meeting.
I recognize them, yeah.
And this is in their public safety training compound they have for fire training in Eugene. This is in the parking lot. They had I took two pictures because they, right next to it, they had a porta potty and a trash thing. And then next to it was these kind of wagon train style individual ones.
Conestoga.
And there's folks living in them. So this is what Eugene is allowing as, I mean, it's not...
Is some community group building those, I wonder?
I'm not sure. That's why I took pictures. I was going back out to my car, and it was like, okay, this is...
At the last LOC in Eugene, I took the tour of three sites of transient housing. One was in an industrial... Oh, two were in industrial, and the third one was in a church parking lot. And they had... All three had a mixture of type of structures. The one at the church had several of those Conestoga type tents.
Interesting.
And some of them had something like Hope Village has, and so it's.
Those are like wood shelters.
Yeah.
They have had a tiny home on a trailer advertised all over town called Foundry Village.
Foundry Village, yeah.
And it reminded me of this.
That's Doug Walker.
It's quite Fazer's involved in Doug up Walker's on Foundry it. Street.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I emailed you those photos, Trish.
That reminds me that, you know, the budget the Oregon legislature just passed has $400 million for housing. And they're talking about spending the majority of it on vouchers and keeping people in their homes and energy updates in those homes. And every time I get in a room where I can talk about it to those folks, say, hey, we got to build something.
Yeah.
We got to build some units. And I'm hoping they will incentivize the building by maybe covering a city's SDC costs or permit costs or delayed tax abate, or what, tax abatement would be the same as delaying taxes. But have that money come out of that fund and not out of the city's funds or out of the county's funds. And so I'd invite you guys to get in that conversation in any way you can through your legislature representative or through the housing advisory committees and your housing, our local Josephine County Community Housing Group, because I know you're a member of that as well. But we got to find a way to work on the supply at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because,
no question about it.
Yeah, we know we're short over 100,000 units, and if they don't build something out of that $400 million, that's a real disservice to the taxpayer. $400 million.
You said 400,000.
I'm sorry, $400 million set aside.
I was going to say.
Yeah, that'll do one.
those tiny home wood structures that are basically on a trailer
skid.
Bed
cost
about $7,500.
I know, but who's going to monitor it? And who's
going to,
I don't know.
And there's
a lot
whole bunch
questions.
Of stuff.
Sure.
That, and certainly I don't think the county or the city wants to be the controlling.
Got that right. We need a public entity to be a nonprofit or something.
Yeah, exactly.
Regard. And maybe we can partner with them in some way, but that, I think it still needs to be a private leadership.
I agree. Yeah. I agree.
One of the things we need to caution on is that they're moving their homeless problem to Southern Oregon.
Yes, I know. If you build, they will come.
So what we're doing is we're putting out a bowl of milk, and we're going to have every stray cat out of along I-5 will be coming to Josephine County because we're providing everything for them. And then we're going to run around, and our people are going to say, what are you doing about the homeless problem? Oh, we have these little tiny homes for them. And, oh, well, that's great, because they're going to have 30 of those homes, and you're going to have 300 people coming down here to stay in them.
Yep.
Yeah. And people say, oh, well, I don't believe that. And I says, well, you can talk to Commissioner Donnie Boyd over in Klamath Falls, because he took a case of beer down to the park just to ask. So he had people coming over his table to get a free beer. He says, so where are you from? Every one of them was from the Willamette Valley.
Wow.
Every one of them. And I can visualize, I'm just visualizing, I can't prove any of this, but that the people in Portland, Eugene and Salem are saying, Governor, you need to do something about this. Now, they're building a 100,000 square foot DHS building in Klamath Falls to service 63,000 people in the county. We have a 60,000 square foot DHS building to service around 83,000 people. And the word is, rumor is that they're saying, we're out of resources in Portland and Eugene because we have such a huge problem. But you know what? Look right here.
Yeah.
Klamath and all of the depressed, deprived communities in Southern Oregon, and we're going to just welcome all that money with all that employment opportunity for more government jobs and 100,000 square feet, and we're going to become this. We're going to be the destination resort.
For less.
For homeless. And I just want us to be very cautious. It all makes you warm and fuzzy, and you feel real good about supplying everything for these folks. When I'm telling you, that, and Commissioner Fowler's on it every time, there's a difference between people that really need it and people say, ha ha, gimme, gimme, gimme.
Yeah,
I'm
exactly.
Not doing anything.
Yeah,
I want to live this way, leave me alone. And there's still going to be those people that are walking around with all their belongings in a shopping cart and everything on their back, and you say, do you want a place to stay? No, I love it. I'm doing exactly what I want.
Yeah.
There are people that live in various portions of Eastern Oregon and stuff, and you go way back in the middle of nowhere and you say, you know, don't you want to kind of get a little bit closer to society? I said, no, I don't.
I don't. I look at it from the point of view, there's two classes of the homeless. And one is the professional homeless. That's all they want.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are those that are in that situation due to circumstances. Basically,
and there's a certain amount of the mentally ill.
But I'm going to challenge. I appreciate the thought. But I've also seen people that are walking barefoot in blistering heat or reversing cold who, under their mental illness, say,
yes.
No, this is what I want. This is where I want to be. I don't want anything else. And yet they're dehydrated to a point that their life's in danger or freezing to the point of death.
Mm-hmm.
So regardless of today, this is what I'm comfortable with, this is what I know, what got them there?
Yep.
Is it because they were a veteran and the PTSD of living around people is too much?
I agree.
Is it because the substances of numbing whatever they were facing? So I am, even if someone says they want to be homeless, it may be because it's all they know. Or they don't know how to get out of that circumstance.
That's the difference.
They're helpless at the same time.
But we know right now there is not enough inventory in our community for our workforce. So let's take the homeless transient population out and just look at what our homeless need, not homeless, our housing, set them aside for a second.
Yep.
And not make it about transient or homeless. Let's look at our housing inventory. Yep. We know that Dutch Bros is having recruitment issues for executives because they can't get it. Asante is having issues with recruitment because either they don't have a job for a spouse or they can't find a house in enough time to do that. It was interesting to me because we have our Dimmock property up here. I think that would make a great multi-level workforce housing, not low-income housing, workforce housing. So somebody coming here for a job, we have apartments and condos and stuff like that, that they, until they can find something else, and it's workforce, so we can get you here to get start working until you can transition out. And you know what someone said? That's too much a burden on the school system. You can't do that right there. But we don't have housing for people. We're not getting the jobs for people here.
We can change the bus routes.
You know, it's one of those things that we have to think bigger. And we do not have the inventory to deal with any of it. So I'm sorry, I have to take this call. But go ahead, sir.
Okay, going back, and I was having lunch with Anita. We're adversaries from Clackamas County, Ken Holbertson. And he says, well, there isn't anything the government can do to get out of the way and help and increase housing. And I said, really? I said, so everybody has to have a lawn with a sprinkler system all put in? Everybody has to have a two-car garage, all sheetrocked and everything? Well, yeah. And I said, then you're telling this person what they can afford. I said, I've got a friend of mine who just did a permit for a house up on Highland. You know how much a building permit was?
$22,000.
Oh, no, buddy. Keep on going.
Well, SDCs included?
$46,000 for a family. You have an SDC? Yeah. $46,000 for a building permit. Now, if I was a guy that's going to go, and that's his house is going to be stellar, you can believe that. However, but for a regular house, what is the building permit and the SDCs and all the stuff that we require as an entity? Now that person pushes him out to where he can't afford that. So what do we have to, what does he have to do? Now he gets to go live over here on Foundry Street, or, you know, in Laurel down there, and he gets, and that's when he gets to live in a house that's got issues with mold, dry rot, da-da-da-da-da, because there's no place else for him to go. And so that's what we're forcing him to living in, because we are trying to say that if you're going to build a new house, it's going to be A, B, C, D, E, and F. I did a bunch of homes for Northridge years ago, and the minimum, they had to put the fence in, they had to put the driveway in, they had to put the lawn in, sprinkler system, completely sheetrock garage, all appliances, high efficiency heat pump, high efficiency gas furnaces.
Solar panels on the roof.
What's that?
Solar panels
on the
roof.
That's California.
It wasn't,
That was 1.5 for us as well.
Not back then.
1.5%.
But it wasn't solar panels on the roof. But it had to have a programmable thermostat.
Really? I haven't heard that.
It had to have this, it had to have that. Now they're adding solar panels and a charging station for your electric car in the garage. All of these things requirement by us. I don't want to live in a basic house, but why the hell can't I put a baseboard heater in each one of the rooms instead of a heat pump? Put in a baseboard, a spot heater, and you know what? If I can't afford to heat the whole house, at least I can move my family in the living room and live off of one heater, and they're warm and dry. But we don't want to give them that option. Nope, you got to have a forced air system or these little
ductless
splits to do a house with them. $10,000, $12,000, $14,000.
Yeah.
And we're demanding that of people. So when we say, just isn't anything I can do as a government official, you're lying. You're not giving the people a shelter housing category. And I'm not saying these things can go anywhere. I'm saying that where Mr. Fowler's talking about it, just say, okay, you're gonna pick an area of town and you're gonna say, you know what, we're gonna do this. This is all gonna be, you're gonna lower the expectation. Maybe they don't need curbs, gutters, sidewalks, underground, everything, you name it, in order to get this thing off the ground. Those are requirements of us on them to tell them how we think they should live. Because why? Because we live that way. Yeah. We're not doing that. And then what's the next thing? A little hut with a canvas tarp over the top of it? There's something that's falling
something
in between that.
Yeah.
You'd think there was something that would be in between that we could all agree on. Nope, we're not interested in that. Because why? We're the Ken Holbertsons of this world. I'm going to tell you how you're going to live and what you're going to live in and what it's going to cost you. And that's scary.
I have a question that I'm curious if the League of Oregon Cities has taken on or if we as the counties and cities should look at. And that's historic designations. At one point it was anything over 50 or 70 years or something like that. And my house, built in 51, is now can be a historic designation, and it's just the same as everything else on my street. The entire town could be a historic designation. Have they thought about changing that designation to make it further?
Because
no offense.
But I think
anything before the 50s is historic. Anything after the 50s is
memorable. Wouldn't you have to apply to put your house on a historic list of some sort? And if you wish not to be on a historic list so that you can have the latitude to remodel any way you want.
True. I guess I look at my neighborhood, for instance, and the lady behind me's house was built in the 1800s. Mine was built in 1950, but they both count as historic. Well, what's really historic to the community? The original farmhouse in the neighborhood, or the tract home that went in the 50s like everybody else in the suburban overload after World War II? But at one point it made sense that that was the designation as they started downing this historic stuff, but they've kept that number stagnant. So as it moves forward, and I'm approaching 50, everything in my lifetime is going to be historic. And no offense, the 70s and 80s aren't historic yet. That's I guess I'm just wondering if it's anything anybody's talked about at the state level or the national level of
Your house is 50.
I'm not saying I want to designate my house.
No, that's what I mean. But because your house is 50 years old, it's not historic to you. So you're not in anybody's list. You should be able to do anything you want. That's a voluntary thing if you want to put your house on historic to preserve it, like up on Washington Boulevard.
And there's some criteria.
I'm just saying that they, since that target is continually moving, should it? Or should it be that historic in our era is before World War II or something like that?
Well, if we don't change our ways today, we won't be here in 8 or 9 years anyway. The 16-year-olds are telling us that. I don't know why you're even worried about it.
At least it's coming from a...
okay, so...
Why are we even concerned?
It was just a thought of, as I'm realizing, that things that used to be unique are now being mundane because of the criteria not changing.
Well, each year I sit on the League of Oregon City Policy Committee that makes recommendations to the legislature, and we have not addressed, at least in the, and maybe I haven't been in the right committee, but that hasn't really come up as something to tackle.
Okay, right? Just curious. I don't know if you guys have faced it with your historic districts and everything else like that as well.
There's a movement to look at Washington Street, Washington Boulevard area.
Historic district.
As a residential historic.
Yeah, wouldn't that, all of a sudden, the guy wants to upgrade the old house up here on Washington Boulevard. I did some work, and you've probably done work on historic things, like the Wolf Creek Inn. I went up there, well, we want to do this, this, and this. And I said, you can't. Do you know that? I offered to put a floor retro. Oh, no, you're not going to do that. I said, then where do you think the air is going to come out of? Well, I don't know. I said, can I put one on the wall? No. Can I put one in the ceiling? No. Can I put it in the floor? No. I said, what are you going to just wish it to come inside? There was, because it was so historic, you couldn't touch it. I don't know. I'm surprised it doesn't have old fuses in there. We used to put a penny under those fuses in the history days.
Oh, yeah.
So I can't take that out of there because breakers, because we still want to put a penny underneath there.
Remember when the definition for a classic car was 25 years? I'm not sure if a 91 Nissan Sentra qualifies as a classic.
That doesn't, to my mind, however.
That's almost a 30-year-old.
I know.
What's considered.
But just not sure we're going to have it up on a pedestal spinning around.
So my 1982 Mazda 626, baby.
All of a sudden, like downtown, that you can't just do anything you want downtown.
No.
Because somebody somewhere put that whole downtown, into a historic application. So you're going to go take that section of town and do the same thing.
And there'll be opt-in, opt-outs for that as well.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
I just thought it might be something that if there are groups talking about it, we talk about the time frames.
And Lily, you will find that as you get older, this becomes more of a, I'm almost there.
I am definitely an antique right now.
Well, I think we're all through the gamut here this morning.
One other thing to consider.
I'm not saying you're antique, but I say your spokes are creaking a little bit.
One other thing to consider is flexibility, and I think that this is something that we need to, both of us, take a look at. Just as Dan says, there are certain requirements that you have to follow. But, for instance, I came was told of a situation where a business went in town, a brewery, and they're just making beer, but they had to have a grease trap.
All right, same kitchen rules apply.
Yeah. And it makes no sense because they don't even have any grease. But they had to put in this very expensive grease trap.
Yeah.
It really is ineffective in what they're doing. And so I think that flexibility of meeting the needs of
four categories is all it would amount to. Is if you say, okay, we're going to have this kind of a house, and then you're going to have this kind of a house, and then you're going to have the Conestoga with a blue tarp over the top and two F-14, F-70-14 tires on the road. But there's got to be a happy medium in there somewhere. There has to be more categories with different levels mm-hmm. of requirement. And if you can get into a smaller requirement home and you get some guy that's working out here at Master Brand Cabinets and his wife works in the cafeteria for the schools and they're just barely getting by, they can't afford $3,000 a month payments. They can, but they could certainly afford $900 to $1,000.
Yeah.
We're not providing. You can't go get a house for $900 to $1,000 because that's under $200,000. And used houses are selling for well over $200,000 now. We've moved back into that. But I'll give you an example. When we were doing those Northridge homes, they were selling for $349 to $389. They were all, there was only five floor plans and we did 36 homes. They were all the same. They were $349, $379, $389. They were selling like hotcakes. The last batch that they sold after it tanked was right up above the freeway up here, and they had a great big sign out in the front yard, $139. New home for sale, $139. Now, they didn't make any money at that $139, but they probably may if they lost money. They didn't lose very much. So, therefore, I'm looking at now they're back up to $349, $329, $3 for a brand new home, and rightfully so, because you know, all brand new stuff. But
and cost they, of materials have gone
exactly.
Up.
But as that goes, and I'm a proponent of this, I'm not opposed to it. But as that wave begins to build, you are building SDCs at the same time. Other than like when we got on the thing and it just started to crown over, and the city piled all these SDCs on and over she went, and we had to retract a lot of those. And but we said, creep it up as the economy comes back, and you've done that. So I don't have any problem with that. However, we do need to have, you know, some requirements. I think there should be another class.
Do you think the county and the city could get together and develop a some sort of a flexible standard that would meet?
Could be introduced to both LLC and AOC and say, hey, can we build this minimum house? Yeah.
Can we build something without the state coming in and saying you're going to have to put sprinklers in it, you got to have an ADA this and all the other stuff, just a normal house? Because you know what, people will live in. You know, I just want them warm and dry. Gosh darn it, I don't like families out here to live. I don't like them living in. You know, I've got a rental. I've got a really nice lady and her mom that live in there. But you know what, that's not the nicest house on the block. They love it because number one, they can afford it and they're warm and dry.
Yep.
Yeah.
But if I said, okay, if I were to send a home inspector down there and say, go down and inspect that home, they'd come back and go, oh my gosh, you know that garage ready to fall over? I says, yes, I am. I know that. I'm aware of it. But to today's standards, they would never be able to live there. It would be called uninhabitable.
Yeah. But to keep the rent low.
By somebody's standards, not theirs. To them, it's the Taj Mahal.
Well, I think that a collaboration effort between
them. Maybe we need to provide something.
Yeah.
We need to come up with some sort of an idea.
Like the housing committee, it might be a spot to try that, see if they like the idea, and then you could make it up with a couple builders and a couple planning folks and come up with something.
Yeah.
And as long as we draw the horn in, a planner go, wow, no, you can't do that. Why? We've got to do this. But I think at the state level, there's got to be some compromise on the state level, because the states do dictate a lot of what our planners
They just maybe need something to look at, a proposal.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I want to reiterate what Commissioner Morgan said about aiming for the workforce housing, for even incubator homes that are a less, the entry is better, so that we're not targeting the transient and...
That would take pressure off.
Quite honestly, if we have the inventory, it comes down. It's one of those things that it'll affect everybody's housing availability.
Exactly. It'll take the pressure off the upper class as well as the...
That workforce conference, you know, last year the solution they had is let's just supplement everybody's rent. Rent is not helping with inventory, and we don't have the inventory. It's the supply and demand. If we have enough supply, the cost will be at a reasonable cost where people can afford the rent.
And you would have competition in the rental industry, and therefore you probably...
The rent should not be that you have to have three adults working in your home to pay rent.
Right.
But that's what it is right now.
That's what it is.
A three-bedroom house getting up to $1,800 a month in Grants Pass... is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's not only ridiculous, it's absurd.
And when you have a single parent with children who is one income that is trying to provide for a family, and they say it's supposed to, your rent needs to be be affordable three times your income or a third of your income, that doesn't exist in our community right now. So how do we fix that? Is to get the inventory to a level that there's enough housing that it keeps the prices fair and reasonable to our income. Our incomes also need to adjust. We're one of the lower incomes in the state. But at the price of, you have to have the businesses can't shore the cost of losing. You have to have the whole balance of everything come up together. But the inventory, if there's enough inventory for our workforce, that means there's enough inventory to come down for rental market for everything else as well.
We have people that would like to live in a new home, but they can't, so they're taking up space.
I love
in
my
rent.
Old house. It's character.
The Housing Advisory Committee was chartered, basically, as I recall, to explore all housing from executive level all the way down. And
well, it used to be when I bought my first house back all before you all were born, except for Roy. You went to the bank and they had an ability to repay. They looked at an ability to repay. And now, because of the ability to repay, you've got a $400,000 house. You used to consider that if you bought a $400,000 house, your payment was going to be $4,000 a month. And that's what it was going to be on a 30-year mortgage, because by the time you added interest and taxes and everything, it was $4,000 on a $400,000 house, about 1% of what it was going to pay. And then it'd pay off in a long time. You pay for it about 2 to 3 times what you originally, unless you started making payments on. So people couldn't afford that. There was no way they could afford it. So what did we do? We said, we'll stretch it out to 189 months worth of payments. What can you afford? Last time I bought a car, I said, how much is that car? And he goes, how much do you want to pay a month?
Yeah.
And I said, how much is the car? And I'll decide how much you want to pay a month. If I can get you that car, if you tell them, I want $600 a month, I can do that for you. I can get your payment $589 a month. Will you buy that car today? But you just signed on for 96 months worth of payment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's all creative financing. And we're doing that the problem is that guys never ever gonna, home ownership is the American dream, not a mortgage. The day you pay that off, that's your American dream. I've done it. And when you pay that home off, my dad came home and we all gathered around the fireplace, opened up the glass door of the fireplace, and he burned the mortgage. That was a big deal. And I didn't know what the hell that was until I paid my mortgage off. I went, I'm free. The handcuffs are gone. The bars are open. Not the
except
bars.
For property tax.
But people complain about that, but that's truly affordable compared to a $2,500 a month house payment.
Sure.
You can't do that. As Commissioner Morgan says, you got two or three people. The people want to keep their kids at home to help pay the mortgage. What the hell have we gone? And that's all done through creative financing. It's disgusting. It's really disgusting. So, I'm sorry.
This is definitely a hot topic.
Heard from multiple developers that multi-unit housing, the cost for construction and the permits is so extraordinary that that's why single housing is the quick, easy, I can make a profit where I can't make a profit on the other.
And the bank doesn't want to finance those either. They'll only do short-term loans that they redo in 4 or 5 years.
Right.
And that's another reason they don't want
to sell that paper.
I'm not saying everybody wants to live in apartments, but
some do.
No, yeah. I hear you. And as you get to different places in life, you either want more maintenance or less maintenance on your place. And so, but just the fact that I've heard contractors said, I used to do this. I would put in housing. I can't even afford to rent to folks anymore.
No.
With the thing. So that is an ongoing issue. I know you guys have heard that with the housing committee saying that as well, but how can we be a help? And
it's not an easy nut to crack.
I like the idea of creating a program here and then submitting it.
Yeah.
You know, rather than tell them your problems and let them create it. Why, if we know how to fix it here locally, let's create that band of housing, that level of participation.
I think that's a good idea.
See if we can make it happen.
Mark Stevenson's on a statewide committee that addresses the policies and the codes and stuff like that.
But I'd rather it go from here up rather than from them down.
Is he going to the housing?
Than the top down.
Absolutely.
Mark Stevenson?
Our planning director.
Probably not, because it's just city, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of city focused.
Well, but even if you put an ADU on your property, it throws you into the next water meter or the bigger size unit, and you're like, that's actually one bedroom addition. Why could that not have been handled on this as a single? I mean, it's just one of those things. Is the cost of the infrastructure so much that it's prohibitive from doing? And thus, we're still not meeting the inventory needs.
We're looking for opportunities to increase. I'll tell you, I did read my water bill this last month when I paid it. It was $71. I'm still watering along a little bit every once in a while. But then I actually read it. The water consumption was $11, and the rest of it was just add on. And you know what? The whole town is starting to read your utility bill, and they're not real happy about it.
No, they're not.
Because I'm going $11 for water. That's what I'm paying. That's my water bill. I paid $11 for water, and I paid for a 3/4-inch meter, I think, on three different lines on that bill. Two at least. 3/4-inch water meter this, 3/4-inch water meter that, 3/4-inch water meter this, and every one of them added $260, $11, or whatever it is, and delivery charge, and then delivery, and then transport charge.
Lift just kept charge.
It was all over the map, and I thought, you know, I'm okay with doing it. I know you need a water plant, but you know what? Be real careful, because there's a lot of stuff coming up that you really need that you're not going to get just because every month you give them a reminder of where you're going. And that's going to be tough as a city. Just my own personal observation.
Anything else that...
We're fully aware of that.
We know we've got the letter now. We'll get that sent off now that we both signed it.
That'll be great.
Is there anything else on the radar that we need to be looking at together?
Did you receive our letter for the River Road Reserve?
Yes.
Okay, just make sure. Go ahead.
I have a question, because it's just an observation. How do you pick which streets you're going to recap?
So we did an extensive pavement management index. Went around.
They videoed the entire
city. I don't know how you could go between 6th and 7th Street on M and not... You wouldn't be able to write in your index because of all the rutting and bounces and bumps and humps and bumps. And you completely ignored that. You ignored Agnes. You ignored... I live on Prospect, but we're just a side street.
Mm-hmm.
The whole street's cracked up. And then you went down and put the storm drain all the way to the end of it, and that's sagging. All that stuff, completely ignored anything else in town. And you went up and paid Piedmont? What the hell were you thinking? Piedmont wasn't in that bad of shape. Either Piedmont or Oregon or both. You're up there capping that
it's
off, and that's a residential street. Not even there. I mean, how do you pick that street? Do you want people to call in and say, "Would you please go look at this and do something?"
No, we've got all the streets pretty much inventoried and determined what needs resurfacing, what needs an overlay, what needs total reconstruction, and some of those roads will get concerns from the community, and they'll say, "Hey, I've got alligatoring and potholes forming," and like, well. This street is slated for a total reconstruction. So it's gone past the level of just an overlay.
Mm-hmm.
The subbase is deteriorated enough that we have to wait for it to deteriorate a little bit more before we invest in a total new project. So depending on the streets, if you got certain interests in streets, just shoot me an email. I'll let you know what they're slated for, if they're slated for an overlay and when.
You don't have a big enough email box.
I heard it was
your mailbox is full. Yeah, dear, just send any street now.
So, yeah, but it's all inventoried, and so streets are pretty easy to respond to when it comes to when's my street going to be looked at, what's slated for improvement for our streets, and so we do have that pretty much marked out.
I called and left a message for Laura on the corner of 6th and Midland. When you pull up there westbound, you look north to see traffic on coming down 6th Street. Can't see because I think the city required 2 or 3 trees in the front of that dental office.
Yeah.
Can't see. First off, I thought the dental office was way too close to the street because I have to go past it. It's almost like the little motel on across from Dollar General. You've got to get clear out into the street before you can go across.
And that's on Manzanita.
Yeah, Manzanita. And then we did the same darn thing with that dental building. I have to pull out, and then the guy next to me, because my truck's taller than his car, he can't see to go, and he's turning left. It's a mess. It was supposed to be years and years ago, I heard that there was funding for a light there, and it got used somewhere else. And it just never came back on anybody's radar because it's pretty high in traffic accidents, and it never did. And then you went down to 10th and A Street and redid all the AD off-ramps, and they put all the little lamb chop in the middle of the sidewalk and everything else that doesn't seem to work anywhere. The one that's on
coming out of coming out of 10th onto A has been a problem because you got to sneak out there because you've got the wall there.
Yeah, so there's a whole bunch of different things that just don't make any sense, and I don't know.
Aaron.
But you emailed Laura on that one specific
information. I didn't email. I called her and left a message.
Okay. All right. Great. So good.
Because I got a letter out this morning, and Lisa, well, you ought to know what it's like to do that because she must know I live up there. The lady said, you need to, that's why I said, I'll just get a hold of Laura.
Good. Okay.
I had two things that come up I forgot to mention. One, last month we talked about, I heard cats was a topic again, but I never heard if the county shelter or staff can come along. But Counselor Lovelace did come to our Animal Shelter Advisory Committee.
Good.
So hopefully we'll see if that's there. But I also was approached and asked about if the county and city should ever look at exchanging parklands. And I wasn't sure where that's going to go. The two parks that they suggested the city should manage are Tom Pierce and Schroeder, of which I said those are both high use areas for us, mm-hmm. of which we have camping at Schroeder, and we, you know, that funds that a lot of that, and day use fees at Tom Pierce and such. Just want you to be aware that subject was broached with me.
What was your suggestion of moving that to the city? Are they saying that the county's not taking enough care of it?
No, in city proximity, I think was their statement. Right. And so Lower River Road Reserve is in our proximity, so swap was essentially the suggestion. We're on a different fee structure with our parks, with them being self-funded through day use and stuff like that, and the camping and such. But I wanted you to be aware that that was a subject brought to me by a counselor. And
did you throw that to Sarah at all? In our parks?
I think I'd let that settle for a little bit.
I didn't go there.
You do. That's why I'm asking. Is there a fire to put out?
Yeah. No,
I'm not going to talk to her about it.
It's not something we initiated. It's not something that we
are thinking about.
And neither is the city council. The city council hasn't discussed this at all.
Okay, so I just thought I'd let you
pretty
know.
Pretty preliminary.
Yeah.
I kind of was like, well, that would need to be... That's not an easy...
There hasn't been any discussions at the council level on that.
It's not on the radar at this point.
No.
Okay.
Not at all.
Good, let's leave it there.
Yeah.
We are having...
Was that two or was that one?
Well, do you have any complaints about the county that we're not hearing about? We've kind of been landed on them. It was 3-2 today. Yeah. And so we've kind of... Everything,
you come in
we've
here
been
with
talking
lesser
about
numbers, right?
Stuff, concerns we have in the city. Is there anything that we're doing wrong out in the county?
Or that we can help?
I don't... Oh, go ahead.
As you... And I can see this coming, but I want you to understand that when you get ready, when TMB Racing decides they're going to put in their thing and you're going to tell them that they need a 5-tier parking structure, because what if you have a soccer tournament, a YMCA swim tournament, a horse racing tournament, and the county fair... and a car show all going at the same time, you're going to need this many parking places. I want you to look at Autzen Stadium in Eugene. And because Autzen Stadium is there, they have very limited parking. Eugene did not make them put in enough parking for 80,000 people on Saturday.
And it means it's a mess.
Huh?
It's a mess.
It is a mess, but
for miles and miles, it's a mess of trying to find parking.
Commissioner Morgan, I have
OSU is much better.
Okay, but another thing, then let's even go to one step.
And they have a parking structure.
Let's go one step higher. Indianapolis did not make Speedway Indiana put in parking for 350,000 people on Memorial Day weekend. They have parking lots and a transit system all over that responds to shuttling people to that facility. Because if you go out there and you make somebody do it just because you can, and that thing sits empty for 345 days out of the year, you didn't do yourself any good.
Yeah. I think well, I want you to just, Racino, I want you just in be, the column
I want you to
of
be,
the planning.
I want you to be. Aware of the fact that I know how it goes.
We can make that happen.
Yeah.
I know how that goes. You know, that it's, oh, here we go. We've got an opportunity. We've got this guy. He's in deep enough now that he can't get out. Now we can tell him to do anything we want or we won't give him any more stuff.
And I would encourage you, like Dan said, to be prepared for it because we don't want to slow them down either.
No, not at all.
As best you can.
It's something that's on my radar.
But I think the contract does say that it does have to accommodate. One of our negotiations was for... This is taking parking from the thing, so how does parking get dealt with when the entire facilities are being utilized?
Okay, but that does not say it needs to all be on that site. If he has a parking plan that says, the Boy Scouts are using B of A down here and they charge $10 a car, and we supply transit as a route to get to the fair or to a huge event out there, that is part of a parking plan. The parking plan does not say that it all has to be on-site. And we didn't agree to on-site parking. We said if the parking was negotiable.
I just want to make sure that there is a plan.
But in that plan as well, I would like to just recommend that sometimes we do a plan of what we see today, but then that doesn't accommodate down the road when this now is not there or this not in there. And I know you guys are, again, looking at parking citywide.
Mm-hmm.
And this is one of those things that already, because I'm the one that's driving the cart after the Kiwanis go home for the night. So I'm the one out in the parking lot and seeing how many people are walking across the highway to other places.
Right.
Unsafe to walk across the Ave and the highway the way they're walking or across different places. And there are going to be times where... We were concerned that our trailer's just going to go out and park in the community, the neighbors there. Are they? We do want to have a plan, but we want to have a plan that is looking for. Is there an opportunity of all sports park partnership? And what if we had limousine golf carts going across the walking bridge and up behind the back way? I mean, we can look at different things of a plan, but at the same time. I don't want to not go a route. If that is the best route, then that's the best route too. We have to look at the whole parking plan for everything and not say we will or will not do something.
Think outside the box and come up with the best plan possible.
Well,
things aren't going to be the same in 20 years as they are right now. So what's the parking need in 20 years or 50 years? Because you're only building it once for a 50-year lease.
Mm-hmm.
So that also has to be taken into consideration.
Mm-hmm. At NASCAR, when I went down to Sears Point, do you know where I parked? Parked at the Napa Airport. And I thought, well, they're going to bring a bus around. He says, oh, no, helicopters. And the whole thing was helicopters. A couple of guys rode out with Rusty Wallace and his wife.
Different planet.
Climbing there. They take off. They had it all handled. But the Sears Point will not accept 300,000 people all parking their individual cars all over the mountainsides. And they would still have to be shuttled from the parking, to the track. So when you're talking something that big, I just want to make sure we have limited space down there. And I get what you're saying. Further, you know, like say if Mosier ever decides to retire, there's an opportunity for us to buy that, turn it into a big parking lot. But those are things that opportunities knock. However, but to say right now, you're going to have to put up a six-tier parking garage.
At 40,000,
to handle the YMCA because you just used the YMCA's parking lot.
Yeah.
I just
agree with that. It's noon. We want to be mindful of time.
Yeah, that's all I had.
One last thing. I just, while sitting here, got a message from Keijo. So you guys have your Tuesday talk show, and then a separate day is staff talk show.
Mm-hmm.
We have first and second Tuesday of the month.
So we're now going to have third and fourth.
Great.
So third is going to be county departments and programs.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be a whole department, but it could be a program highlight in a department or various things. And the fourth Tuesdays are going to be commissioners. So every day we see you is going to be followed by, or we're going to have KJO in the morning followed by you guys at 11 on these. So instead of it being last Tuesday of the month, we're going to be fourth Tuesday consistently.
Oh, great.
So we're, county departments are going to have thirds, we're going to have fourth. So we're partnering or mirroring you guys.
That is great.
That's good.
And
that's good.
I just want to go back real quick and talk about the fairgrounds, because yes, parking is one of the lead things we're worried about, but we're very excited about the fairgrounds too because of the events that are happening out there, because of the infusion of money from the racing and the soccer is really going to help the fairgrounds. And they're in the midst
of
a plan.
And the businesses around there.
And the businesses around there. And the properties that might be redeveloped differently, where we have maintenance buildings and bus sheds.
Well, that's
and stuff,
one of the reasons
so.
Why the council put the surrounding area
in
the strategic field.
Or redevelopment agency.
Redevelopment.
Yep, exactly.
Roy, who do you
Thank
think
you.
You're fooling? Do you think you're? I'm going to sit here and let you spoon feed me that? I know
yes.
darn well why it's in the urban renewal agency, because it's a cash cow.
Well, isn't that one of the
It
reasons?
Doesn't do anything for Josephine County.
No taxes, right?
Because the taxes are frozen on a huge part of
Oh, well, the county taxes are frozen anyways, because you only get 58 cents per thousand.
But not on the fairgrounds, but we will get revenue.
But
from
any development, 58 cents now,
yeah.
we up the
well,
thousands many, many fold,
yeah.
right.
that's 58 cents a thousand. And if that all redevelops into something, you
yeah.
get it. We
sure.
don't. It's frozen at that.
For
all new developments?
For
all
25
new
years.
I get that. But don't tell me, oh, yeah, we did that to help you out. Are you kidding me? No way. We'll be tapping you, okay? If that's what you say, we're going to be tapping your redevelopment agency for some pretty serious upgrades to our fairgrounds.
Just that some you help put with it the in infrastructure.
Well, fairgrounds
we need any new we need any infrastructure. By golly, that's what needs to happen. Mayor Lindsay said it.
No, I didn't say that.
No
I
promises.
Surrounding area.
City Manager Aaron Kubik just, you saw him wag his head. You
I was, nodding off. I was nodding off.
Good save.
I said the surrounding area.
I just wanted to make sure we said some of the good things about the future of the
fairgrounds. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Because
yeah.
there are some,
We're
there
excited.
Are a lot of good things.
Well, that is going to improve the horse stuff for the 4-H, and all that stuff's going to start moving up.
That yep. whole section yep. of town, you
yep.
know, we've had...
We're going to get a hotel.
It was purpose for what it was purpose
awesome.
At the time. It was a good
yeah.
idea. But now that whole place is changing, especially with the across the river and Tussing Park and the,
yeah.
The land that we've acquired over there. That's a really going to be a really big thing for all
yeah.
of Josephine County and the City of Grants Pass.
Well,
that's
future
be,
growth as well, right
oh,
there
yeah.
on Allen Creek
yeah.
and out in Redwood.
Yeah,
so
yeah, exactly.
More people and more are going to be out there.
Yeah.
One
good
of
good
the
deal.
Things we have to deal with is the sewer coming in from Redwood.
Oh, that's
area.
Another thing.
It's
one thing.
Almost at capacity right now, and then any additional growth is going to be
I would
expensive.
Like, I would like you to, and they kind of swept it under the rug. You've got those two pipes switched on your GIS. There's a pressure pipe and a gravity pipe.
Yeah.
They're backwards.
All right.
Because when Jay Mosier, and I brought this up, and it just went under the
oh.
rug, it's all recorded that way. It's recorded backwards. Jay Mosier, when he wanted to do his river property down there, he said, okay, this is where you can build your house because that's the pressure pipe and you got to stay back 20 feet from the pressure pipe and that's the pressure pipe and this is the gravity pipe. So he's over there digging around the gravity pipe because he can build there. And he told his guys, you know, just be a little bit more careful down there. And he gets down there and the pressure pipe and the gravity pipe, you have a 10-foot setback or 20-foot on each side of the pressure pipe for obvious reasons. Well, it's not, that isn't the pressure pipe.
Wow.
And I said, are you going to go back and change all of that, Terry? Those are all recorded somewhere.
Yeah.
But it's
Terry,
back.
Now you're going back.
That time. Was way back. We were
that.
On council. But most kids, especially, well, it's especially,
that?
And I might be wrong. This is what Jay Mosier told me.
Right,
he knows what he's doing.
Yes,
we
are.
So I would just verify that. Because now if you're going to get ready to revitalize the old Redwood Sanitary Sewer District and do something with a plan out there,
well,
modern day plan.
Yeah, we're working on it right now with a number of different task orders and stuff.
Yeah.
Good.
So, but just look into that. Wait for
anything else? All right. With that, we'll be adjourned at 12:05.